Well, I'm in the studio today with Graham Freer, who has had an interesting life in broadcasting. Thanks for coming in, Graham. Now, you started your radio career in Africa. Was that quite a small radio operation?
It wasn't huge by sort of BBC standards. Yeah. I began in radio at the tender age of 12, actually, as a radio actor in several unmemorable plays with titles such as Dr. Peppercorn Goes to Sea, as well as Shakespeare's Macbeth, which in fact became a standard part of the school syllabus year after year. And it was repeated every year, for which I received an annual repeat fee of 50 pence.
Whoa.
I used to get a cheque in the post for 10 shillings. Having left school, I travelled somewhat footloose and fancy-free throughout Central and Southern Africa.
Yeah.
Returning to Southern Rhodesia, as it then was, in 1966, I landed an announcer producer's position with the Rhodesia Broadcasting Corporation, which I did successfully for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, in search of adventure, I hitchhiked through South Africa, arriving in Durban, from which I worked my passage aboard a Union Castle cargo ship carrying fruit, headed for Southampton.
Yeah. And when you reached the UK, you joined BBC World Service. I think the World Service is something that we've all heard about, but probably not many people know exactly how it operates. Perhaps you can give us a brief outline of the service?
Yes, it wasn't directly that I joined the World Service. I went through local radio in Southampton, where I then was.
Oh, yeah.
Radio Solent, where I had some contacts,
uh-huh,
and friends of friends, because in the broadcasting business, you know, contacts are very important.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, through that I started working for the Central Office of Information in London, which was sort of a low-grade propaganda machine,
mm-hmm,
spreading the good word about Britain, you know, to,
mm-hmm, to the world.
Sheep herders in Tanzania and that sort of thing. But basically, I did Radio 1, Radio 2, and also the World Service, which you mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's an international multimedia broadcaster, delivering a wide range of language and regional services on radio, on TV, online,
yeah,
and via wireless handheld devices. It uses multiple platforms to reach its weekly audience of 192. Can you imagine that?
192 million.
Globally. Yeah. Including shortwave, AM, FM, digital, satellite and cable channels.
Yep.
Its news sites include audio and video content and offer opportunities to join the global debate.
Yep.
BBC World Service offers its multilingual radio content to partner FM stations around the world and has numerous partnerships supplying content to news websites, mobile phones,
yeah,
and other wireless handheld devices, as well as TV channels.
Yeah. And is the World Service still as important today as it was years ago?
I think it is, actually. It's there is an English language service, but there are 27 other language services. For example, the oldest World Service is Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
Today, that service is available as a television channel that can be seen more in more than 20 countries in the Arabic world.
Mm-hmm.
BBC Persian is the BBC's integrated news and information service for Persian speakers. It's available on demand via the website bbcpersian.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Mm.
It's designed to reach audiences on radio, on television, the internet, mobile devices, and BBC Persian boasts nearly 12 million audiences inside Iran.
Mm.
It's also one of the oldest of the BBC's non-English language services, launched in 1940. It evolved into the Persian-speaking world's leading international broadcaster by covering the political, social and cultural issues that matter to its diverse audiences in Iran, mm-hmm, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, and all across the world, in fact.
Yeah. And did you ever find yourself announcing serious, like, breaking news to the world, or...?
Not I, personally. I used to present The World Tonight,
mm,
as one of several other ad hoc presenters, and of course there are frequently and regularly items and matters of international import within bulletins, but I myself was never caught at the right side of the microphone when, you know, someone like Kennedy was assassinated. Nothing like that. No.
Yeah. And do they make programmes especially for the World Service, or do they use material which is broadcast on other BBC stations?
Yes, they do make most of their own programmes in many different languages, in fact. They also make some English language programmes in collaboration with the international commercial TV news channel BBC World News and with Radio 4.
Yeah, and it's still important today. You talk about what happened during the war and the post-war period.
Yes, indeed. During World War II and in the post-war period, broadcasting to Europe was an important priority for the World Service. Since the collapse of the Soviet bloc, Africa and the Middle East have become the places with the largest audiences.
Yep.
The technology is always changing and challenging too.
Mm.
The traditional view of the World Service is of someone listening on a shortwave radio. Nowadays, the World Service is seen on television, on the internet. BBC Mundo has a very successful web service in South America, for example.
All right.
Mobile phones are also popular, and in countries where less expensive and basic phones are used, the World Service tailors output so that news can be delivered to those cheaper phones.
Yeah, and the 24-hour news environment which we have nowadays, has that altered the way the World Service operates?
Not really. They're part of a 24-hour newsroom in New Broadcasting House in London, working alongside colleagues from BBC News. It used to be in Bush House in the Strand, but it moved out from there, and now they're situated all in the one sort of central broadcasting house, effectively.
Yeah.
When they were based in Bush House, there was less collaboration between international and domestic news, but today it's quite common to see BBC World Service journalists on UK domestic news, for example, providing coverage of the Westgate Shopping Centre story in Nairobi, if you remember that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And after your time with the World Service, you joined commercial radio. Tell me about that experience.
I didn't go straight from World Service to commercial radio, but via commercial television, in fact. I was at home in Hythe, near Southampton, and I saw an advertisement in The Stage for continuity announcers at HTV's Hardy Cardiff Studios and applied for it.
All right.
I was sent an audition script which also included a page in Welsh, plus instructions to report to Cardiff on that coming Friday. Well, I didn't know how to speak Welsh, as it happens, but I managed to locate someone nearby, curiously, who spoke Welsh, and within 24 hours she managed to teach me how to speak the words sufficiently well that I got the job. I still don't know, still don't know what I said. I could have been reading the Shopping Channel news for all I knew, but yet, well, then I received a call from Capital Radio, who were inviting me to audition. They were setting up as the second station to go on air in London, and I joined the launch news team, and after we went on air in October 73, became their principal newsreader, which I did happily until the three-day week and the result of advertising revenue starvation caused the sharp contraction of newsroom staff. So I went across to the other commercial station, LBC / IRN, Independent Radio News, where I stayed for 2 years before securing a job in Johannesburg as chief sub-editor with the new TV news service of the SABC, which they were setting up.
Yeah.
And then I returned to England after a couple of years and worked for several commercial radio stations in Wolverhampton, in Sheffield, Crawley, Brighton, Fareham.
You got around.
Well, yes. You had to be, you know, have suitcase, well, travel, really. Until it was deemed that having turned 65, I was too old and unfit for purpose.
And I understand you're now working with Radio Hasler locally.
That's such fun, too.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I actually was in Hasler Hospital for a blood test and saw a notice on the notice board from Hasler saying they were looking for a presenter. So I applied and was auditioned. And then after about six sessions of training, was offered the job of a weekly one-hour show, which has been extended to 2 hours now, and they've offered me another two hours some other time. But, I mean, that's basically where I am now, loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am.
And what sort of music are you playing on Radio Hasler? A mix?
A mix, broadly speaking. I liked an old friend of mine was